Over two centuries ago, it was England that taxed our tea. Now it's Brussels trying to regulate our companies. Under new European regulations, American businesses face crushing fines, forced disclosures, and foreign red tape that kills jobs here at home. America's laws should be written in America, not Brussels. Reject European regulatory overreach and uphold Trump's trade deal. Paid for by Americans for Limited Government.
Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously, your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Degen Dads Podcast. I'm Chris, and of course, I have my co-host Kyle with me today. Good morning, Kyle. How's it going today, man?
Yo, man. It's going. How are you
doing? I'm good. So this is going to be the first podcast episode where the entire episode is going to be embedded on Twitter. So I'm pretty excited about that. And speaking of Twitter, there's just been some huge innovations recently. Did you see that they uploaded the entire first season of an Apple TV show directly onto Twitter?
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, that's crazy, man.
Yeah, it's like some dystopian. I watched a little bit of it and like skimmed through the episode. It was like a dystopian looking. I'm interested. Now it does have me interested in wanting to watch it, though, I will say. And I saw Elon tweet about it, too.
Yeah, man. I mean, I was just thinking last night, like, what a great way for any streaming company to advertise one of their shows. Because all they have to do is embed, like, an entire episode. And someone like you watches it and is like, you know what? That's pretty cool. Maybe I should go watch the entire season. So, like, you know, this could happen for, I think obviously YouTubers are going to be doing it, like this podcast right now, Netflix, Hulu, Peacock, even like Crunchyroll, like anime streaming devices. Like I see everyone wanting to utilize that because it's like an extended teaser, you know, like instead of like a trailer, you're embedding an entire episode to get people hooked and they might like it so much that they go and pay for a month of your streaming service. So it would totally be worth it.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like one of those things where it was an obvious play. It's cool that Twitter actually enables long-form content now, too, at the same time. So what they did is pretty smart. You go to where the fish are, and it's kind of that simple. So it's good to see brands actually using their noggins and doing actual marketing. So it's nice to see that.
Yeah, and like you said, it seems like an obvious move, but like it's something that I really haven't seen on any other social media. And if I have seen it, it's not nearly as nice. It's not like embedded, you know. Like I might see somebody record a episode of a season and upload it on their personal profile or something, you know, but like I haven't seen like Apple TV upload an entire episode onto Facebook, you know. So it's just interesting that none of the other companies have actually made that move to do that. And I don't know, there's like this weird like competition thing maybe. Like they're like, well, if we let them do that, maybe people will go to that instead of stay on our media. But it makes sense because you're still staying on Twitter while you're watching it. So like Twitter's still getting that retention time. They just recently announced, they've been announced this, but they're getting even more into like ads. So they'll be able to eventually like run ads on that and monetize that and monetize it for creators. So it's just interesting that we're like just now really seeing this with Twitter, opposed to like we haven't really seen it on any other media.
Yeah, you typically just see like trailers or like the first 10 minutes of an episode, but the full episode, you typically don't see that. You just see them doing it on their own platform where it's like you get a free episode and then you have to buy the whole season. But again, this is like good thinking. I mean, I'm happy to see good marketers finally in tech. So Sometimes that's not always the case. But Apple, they have pretty good marketing, you know, generally,
for sure.
than other tech companies. So it's kind of nice to see.
I guess that's why their stocks are like, all-time high.
I'm in tech, so I see how the marketing goes because that's how my brain operates. So at least in the blockchain space, it's not been the best. It's just in some cases it's atrocious in Web3.
Yeah, man. I actually saw a tweet the other day that was talking about that. Like, just imagine some of these Web2 companies like acting like Web3, where you like raise all this money and then you like make announcements of announcements and you kind of like never deliver. Like that just doesn't slide, you know.
It doesn't go in Web2. Yeah.
But yeah, man, I mean, Twitter is really becoming like a one-stop shop. Like, it's kind of getting everything. I'm sure you saw this too, but like yesterday they just announced. So like, obviously they were already allowing like long form tweets. I don't remember the character count up until that point, but now you can do a long form tweet up until 25,000 characters. Now, like, originally when I first saw that, and I'm sure a lot of people's initial response is going to be like, why would you need to write that much? But this is essentially replacing the need for other newsletters or other blogs. It can actually be directly on Twitter. So instead of Twitter redirecting you to this newsletter site, Twitter now is the newsletter that people are going to be going to for, you know, detailed reports. Now, there's obviously still like a need for like all these other sites, and obviously we have traction over there. But to me, this is another good move for Twitter because, again, they're becoming the one-stop shop. They have video content up to, actually, I think it's over an hour now, but it was up to an hour in 1080p. Now they have long-form written content. Twitter Spaces is great for podcasts. A revolutionary way to do podcasts. That being said, obviously they weren't the first ones to do it. Like, you saw Clubhouse and a lot of other people do it, but Twitter is the first one that's really getting traction with that, with thousands and thousands of people in just one space at a time. So I don't know, man. Like, I'm kind of feeling pretty bullish on Twitter's future for creators and for consumers.
Yeah, I mean, to me, Elon's purchase made sense. Maybe he bought it a little bit more than what it was actually worth, but I think long term will prove that like it was a good investment, in my opinion. He's done a great job. Like, again, Twitter didn't have too many improvements before Elon came along. Then he came along and kind of lit a fire. Unfortunately, he did some layoffs. I mean, people were affected by that. But I think the macro is he's developing and pushing the platform forward, which is what we wanted to see. The users were already there. People were already liking Twitter. It's just like, how can you deliver even more for your users? And this is him delivering on that kind of promise, if you will. And, you know, looking at it from a marketing angle, it just makes sense. You know, Twitter could be rivaling other, you know, content platforms out there, and this should be implemented. You know, if you're a marketer, and I've done like 10 years plus in marketing, and I'm looking at this as an angle, how to use this long form content to rank, because this is going to be searchable content. People are going to be going into Twitter just like they do YouTube and type. They already do. I mean, we're seeing a rise in that as well, searchable content on Twitter, and you're starting to see even like the bigger, like, I guess, thought leaders in the space start talking about that too. And I think Gary V may have mentioned it. If he hasn't already, I'm sure he will.
Gary V, man, that's a great segue into one of our hardest hitting topics today. As you know, every single week on this podcast, we switch from my channel to Kyle's channel on YouTube, and now it's going to be embedded on Twitter. At least this episode is. We hit all the latest in crypto, NFTs, tech, and finance. And just today, breaking news. Palm NFT merged with Candy, which is a company that Gary V has invested in. So that's why I was saying, as a segue into this topic, what do you think about this merge, Kyle, from what you've seen so far?
Yeah, this is probably a good move for both companies. I don't know how many people are using Candy, so maybe this is like more of a, like, if we band together, we'll do better, you know, if that makes sense, like both financially and success wise. And maybe Candy has more IP that they could bring into the blockchain or the Palm ecosystem. So I think it probably benefits both parties involved here. So for me, I'm kind of excited to see what they'll kind of produce, or if this will improve the ecosystem that they're planning on, you know, rolling out, or maybe if they're just using Palm blockchain on the back end. So I'm very curious. They have a space tomorrow. About, I'm sure, more of this, what we'll hear. But overall, I have a little bit of sense of optimism here that they'll bring some more goodies into the space. And it's really about pushing the needle forward. Like, I heard a founder yesterday, or somebody mentioned that he said that like the volume NFTs are shrinking, like NFTs in general, like users are shrinking. So anything that can push this space forward is a positive for everybody.
Oh,
so
yeah, I completely agree, man. I actually went straight to the FAQ when I heard the announcement, and they already like updated this on their FAQ, which I think is pretty cool. And I'll just read it real quick to you and whoever's listening, because it's exactly what you said. So on June 29th, which is the time that we're recording this episode, we announced our merger with leading Web3 technology and production company, Palm NFT Studio. So this is Candy writing this. Together, we will accelerate the development of impactful technology, empowering brands to innovate in Web2 and Web3. Our goal is to continue to build the future of fandom, to serve and the resources of the communities that we work in, and to break new ground in on-chain experience. And just a little background on just like a what is Candy, because I'm going to be honest with you, I've never used the platform before. I'm going to tell you in just a minute on one thing I'm particularly excited about. But what is Candy? It's the next generation of digital collectible company offering unique NFTs for fans and collectors, giving them the ability to purchase and sell NFTs to deepen their love of sports, culture, and entertainment. And like you said, there's already like, they already have their own IP. So this is kind of like a good merge of IP as well. But one thing I've seen people speculating on, and I'd even go further to say it's probably past speculation, is Candy already offers crypto on-ramp and off-ramp. So that's one thing that we've been waiting for a while on Palm. It's just to kind of have that connection with MetaMask to be able to buy, let's say, Batcows or whatever with crypto, with Ethereum or with Bitcoin or Solana, whatever. And Candy already offers this, so it's pretty safe to assume that this is going to be an available feature with the merge. Do you think that's speculation, or do you think that's just inevitable, Kyle?
I'd probably just, it's, I don't know if it's speculation, but I think it's also inevitable. Palm, I think Palm has good connections in general in the space. We haven't really seen them flex their muscles just yet, but, you know, just everything that we've seen, I mean, like I already have Palm already integrated into my MetaMask. Like I know I'm like locked and loaded and ready to go already. So they're probably just moving along at the speed they need to. And, you know, with everything going on, wire shutting down. Anyways, I think it's inevitable. They'll probably find just a new provider, or use, if Candy already has it, then they'll use their resources. So we'll see. I think Candy has multiple blockchains they use too. I think it's Flow and Palm.
I'm looking real quick to see if it's a...
Yeah, because they have the MLB thing, and I think that might be using Flow, and then the rest of them may be on Palm. I'm not really sure. I think I've bought a couple MLB moments on there, or whatever they're called, on Candy, just to try it out. And I got a pretty good pool as well, or I might have actually went in the secondary and bought one. But
yeah, I feel like every sports related NFT like just defaults to Flow ever since Top Shot.
Yep. Yeah, I think Flow will be. I think as time progresses, we'll probably continue to see Flow keep onboarding more brands. I mean, Mattel has moved from, you know, everything else to using Flow natively on their marketplace. So I wouldn't be too surprised to see more brands start to adopt Flow. And just because Flow's already like set up for mainstream users, which is why you saw Doodles move their Doodles to it, even though, you know, kind of the ETH maxis didn't like it. Now I didn't like their rollout of it, but, the way they communicated it was pretty terrible. But again, that goes back to what we said earlier about marketing and Web3 sometimes. It's atrocious.
It really is, man. Marketing and the just lack of communication. We actually had a huge debacle this week over, I guess, somebody just being out of touch with the space. I'm sure you saw it was literally all over Twitter, but the whole Azuki Elementals mint. So for those of you that weren't keeping up, the Elementals is the third drop for Azuki. So Azuki had their original OG mint. The floor price was like 13 Ethereum going into this week. Then they had the free mint, which was the beans. Beans were around like one ETH. And then they announced when they had their event in Vegas that they were going to do another mint. And everybody was super excited about it. But this mint actually ended up being 2 Ethereum to mint, and there's 20,000 of them. And so, yes, they raised 40,000 Ethereum on this mint. They did sell out, and a majority of it was directly to their holders. Here's the problem, Kyle, which I know you've been keeping up, but somebody watching this might not be. The problem is that this third collection looked exactly like the OG collection. So all they did was they took the OG collection, and then they added traits to it. So they essentially got 20,000 more of the OG collection after raising 2 Ethereum each. What's your thoughts on that, Kyle?
I mean, yeah, it's just what a disaster. I mean, it was already overpriced. And then people were trying to kind of save their bags or like save the Azuki team, which I don't know why anyways. It's like, why? By saying it could be an art collectible game. I'm like, it doesn't matter how you spin it. It was a failure. I mean, the art looks almost exactly the same. It could be a game long term, but that's
my place in tech changes every day, but I don't fear the future because I'm with the leader, Pluralsight. Their online learning platform has the hands-on expert-led courses I need to master new tech skills and create bigger impacts so I can learn quickly and stay ahead. With Pluralsight, I don't fear what's next. I embrace it. Tap in at Pluralsight.com and see for yourself.
It's in Azuki's best interest to maybe communicate or at least tease that it's going to be something versus just selling a high-priced. And this goes back to why people in mainstream hate NFTs, like in a nutshell.
Yeah, absolutely. And so Azuki aims to be a decentralized anime, which is cool. But I mean,
that's the cool part.
But having to rely on these mints to gather their funding, I don't know, man. So just a random fun fact, Attack on Titan's like one of my favorite animes that I've watched. And it costs them $150,000 per episode to be able to like make the anime. So just trying to do that math, like Azuki has more than enough to deliver their like first season just from this one mint. But so far, I just haven't really seen what Azuki delivered. I see what they're promising, but just coming out of like left field and doing things like this, I'm not about it. And I'm an anime person. Like I really enjoy anime. So like, it's not like the fact that I don't like everything around it. It's just the fact that I don't really see what other people see. Like I honestly just feel like it's kind of the monopoly of decentralized anime right now. That's why a lot of people gravitate towards it because they like anime and Azuki does have really cool art. But I just don't like how everybody's letting that slide after like this disaster. I'm not saying like I don't like Azuki now. I greatly disagree with everything they did around that. And it doesn't help that their founder's like not present, you know, Zagabond. Like he's active in the Discords, he's active with some of the team that he has that communicate for him. But it's just kind of a weird thing that it seems out of touch. When stuff like this happens, you know,
yeah, it seems like you have a lot of influencers like really propping up the project. There's a lot of good anime in the space. I mean, they do have great art, Azuki does, and I'm on the same page as you in terms of the art, you know, the anime part. But man, it's like, why can't we get behind other anime projects that are either just as good or they have literal OG animators from like either Crunchyroll or like Shonen Jump? Like, I'm like, how do we support, like you said, a known rugger, but like the space doesn't want to get behind actual real people that have real experience. It's kind of weird.
Record, say I didn't say that, which I know I get like he allegedly.
But even though he admitted it already, but allegedly.
Three projects and then came out of space and admitted it. But I don't know. I hear there's another.
It's all alleged.
Another side to it. I don't really care either way. I think Azuki's look cool, and I know a lot of really cool people that are involved with the community. So even if it was, I always just kind of here's how I've always just kind of imagined Azuki. I kind of imagined Zagabond like somewhat irrelevant, like he's still there because he's like the project founder. But I've always imagined like a community-driven decentralized project. So like to me, I don't want to say I don't care, but like I don't think he pulled like this huge stunt. I think, if I remember correctly, because this happened so long ago, he basically launched a few projects and they failed. And so then he launched Azuki and it was successful. But anyways.
He ghosted his old projects. Yeah. Like he didn't even, people were in the Discord, like messaging like, hey, what's going on with this? And what which is commonly referred to as a rug pull. Yeah. Like that, you know, when you kind of like ghost your entire community and move on to another one, that's a rug pull. I mean,
I'm not defending him. I just don't know. The only reason I would like even like get,
allegedly,
the only reason I would give a little bit of like leniency or grace there, is because like there's people that I really respect and trust saying that there's another side, which I have yet to listen to, just because I haven't had
time. I haven't heard it either. That's weird that we've never heard the other side. It's just like there is another side. All right, let's hear it.
But crickets, these aren't random. So. These are people like I actually trust in the space, and that's literally the only reason I'm sitting here saying like maybe there's another side. I don't know.
There could be, and it's just hard to. It's like a really like big pill to swallow to really get excited about it when there's like other great projects. Like there's games out there. There's basic like there's things people there's projects doing like big things out there, and it's like Azuki's not the only. You know, project doing things, you know, so for me it's like there's options. Like it's not the first anime, like there's Oni Force. I haven't even kept up with Oni Force, so I have no idea.
No, just kidding. That was the Logan Paul pumped that project and then it died, and he then did, somebody but rebought it
died.
Yeah, somebody rebought it and
then it resurrected. Yeah.
Dude, you could have made so much money if you'd have bought that dip. Because it was
I actually was going to. I was ready to go. I was looking at the collection and deciding which one I wanted, and then like immediately just pumped literally the next week, and I was like, well, I guess that's that. And so I was like, I didn't get to enter, unfortunately.
So on the anime topic too, before we move on to the next one, and also as always, we have Alpha at the end, so stick around to the end. There's actually a big anime mint today. That's happening today. It's Ether. So Ether only has like 11 tweets. They have 83,200 followers. Granted, yes, a lot of it's botted, and this could be botted too. But it's interesting. Almost every one of their trailers that they released on this, I don't know, my sound was coming through, have gotten like either over a million, a couple million, or like even like half a million views. So like, while like obviously there's some bots involved, they're getting pretty insane traction for like 11 tweets.
The Azuki community ironically is all over it too. Like they're like, oh, I admire this project. So it's cool to see like, you know, them admire it, because like not all the community member, like all the community is pretty solid. I will admit like Azuki has a solid community. So it's cool to see them like jump over to another and like be able to support that. I do love to see that, like supporting other communities.
Yeah, man. And like I said, like the reason I don't want to sit here and just like throw darts at Azuki is because like I do appreciate their community, and they're not Zagabond. Yeah. So as I, you know, I just don't want to just like rub dirt on them. And that's you know, it's kind of a weird thing, because like you are kind of supporting Zagabond at the base of that, but you also don't want to like, I don't know. It's just the whole thing's weird.
Yeah, since it's decentralized, it's kind of like the community has control now. And so there is those like nuances too, you definitely should look at. So there's like the whole body of work of decentralization. And that's one of the benefits that the community can really like kind of drive a project to, you know, even if there is like past failures or weird things that have happened, the community can kind of bring it back together to where it was originally supposed to go, or you know, or the original vision.
And you know, speaking of alleged serial ruggers, Beanie Maxi came out of the grave to talk about this Ether mint. He's been like tweeting like once a week, but he decides to come out and say pricing of Ether mint is risky. Vague roadmap with mint costs 10 times higher than the normal. Free still the meta. Kind of, not really. Secondary price needs a 2.5x for public mint to sell. What if it doesn't? Economics nearly ensure whitelist on public dump either way. Can bear market demand or sustain this? So what he's referring to, the Ether mint, I believe, is like 0.5. Let me look it up before I say it out loud. It's high, though, for this market. Like, I'm pulling up the website right now. I'm not minting this, for the record. It does look really cool. I minted something this week. I'll talk about in a bit. Bro, this thing is so tiny. Like the words on this is so tiny. I can't even read it. No wonder I didn't remember the mint price, because it's so hard. Oh, so the mint price is 0.65, and there's 8,000 of them. Oh, wait.
How much
for the public? For the white list, there's 1,750, and the mint price gets your token at a discount price of 0.35. Or for free.
That's significantly cheaper than the public.
This is cool, though. It says, or for free.
You're talking about 1,200 versus like 650. Yeah, for sure. It's like half price for the allow list.
Dude, this is pretty cool. It does say you it could also get minted for free if you lock it up for 10 weeks. Why would you not do that, bro? There's no risk there. I would do that. I would do that option.
That's so they don't get like the initial flippers, but then in 10 weeks, you'll get flippers still.
Yeah. I feel like
if it goes up,
that more projects need to talk about doing, though, kind of having this like locked up period, you know. So for you know, I work for Ninja Alerts, no surprise there, and we have an upcoming Ordinals Mint, which I'll give you alpha on how to get whitelist to that at the end of this episode. And we're in discussion about, because we are giving some out for free, I don't know what I'm allowed to say on that, but it's still in the works on like, do we lock this up? Or do we just let them have it right off the gate? It's a very interesting conversation to have, because the market needs flippers in a way, like, you know, for like to like show that there's trading volume and all that fun stuff. But you also don't want people just to like dump on the public as soon as it goes public. So it's a very interesting dynamic. I'm about that 10-week lockup for free, though. I would 100% do that if I was minting this. The reason people aren't going to do this, though, is because they want the quick flip. They want to mint it for 0.35 and sell it for 0.5.
Yeah, you do need a healthy, like, collector base. I don't even know, like, because, like, flippers is, like, synonymous with just flooring it. It's almost like you need a healthy collectible community and, like, always general interest in your community in general. So I think that's, like, the underlooked aspect of that. So I don't know, it'd be interesting to see what happens with Ether. I don't know if they have that, because it's not like it happens overnight. You need a lot of interest, and a lot of these projects generate interest just based on hype, and they have zero marketing involved. They have no like follow-up systems. It's not like they're like, oh, subscribe to my email list, or oh, subscribe to this. It's just like, follow me on Twitter, join my Discord. And it's like, that's not enough. Sure. Like, if you think that's just enough, it's not going to last. And so, you know, I was able to advise a lot of projects even before I worked for Alluvium and Myria. I advised a project that got a blue check mark on OpenSea, and they sold out. So
Hey, your boy's got a affiliate badge now on Twitter. I don't know if you noticed that.
What is Pizza. It? Oh, nice.
it's Ninja, yeah. Alerts. We're a legacy verified company now, organization, and obviously because I work for that, I got an affiliate badge for it. So I was excited about that, and it's a really cool one because it looks like a pizza, because that's like our like thing right now, which you know, obviously I can talk about later. But yeah, man, so the
all this pizza talk makes me hungry.
Yeah, I've honestly, I love pizza so much, but I'm getting old and it affects my reflux, so like I have to like really be careful when eating pizza.
Just affects your reflux. What are you talking? It affects the freaking hips, the thighs, the stomach. That's, I mean, I love pizza, man. I get down on some good pizza. I love pizza, but I just, it's hard. Like, it's hard now because like I gotta watch my figure. You know, you know what I mean.
I feel you. That stuff sticks with you the older you get. So, Kyle, I know you have killed it in BRC20 and Ordinals content. Both of us have been bullish since the beginning. We got some pretty cool news earlier this week that BRC20s are making their way to Magic Eden. This is basically just going to allow people to be able to buy and sell BRC20s a lot easier, because let's be real, like for the average person, like it's not like you can kind of just like take like 2 minutes. I mean, I guess you could have went on Alex and done it, but this is just even easier because people are so used to transacting on Magic Eden. What do you think about this news?
It's good. It's good for the space, you know, continued growth, more avenues for liquidity. You know, just more exchanges are always good for a token. So Magic Eden was one of those, the OGs in the NFT space in general. So it's cool to see them add support for that. So
yeah, man, I'm excited. And as somebody who is, I do get lazy at times, you know, like I've obviously transacted with BRC20s, but now if I want a DCA, it just makes it a lot easier. I feel like just cause I'm so used to Magic Eden, just kind of like connecting my wallet and transacting like ordinals or other NFTs on there. So I already, some of my favorite ones like OXBT, I believe like we're part of this. It's like just to be able to buy on there. So all that to say, I feel like my DCAing is going to increase now because it's less of a process than what I was going through. Cause I never did use Alex. I probably should have, but I just never went through with setting it up or anything. So I'm excited about the announcement.
Yeah, Magic Eden has good UI too, so it's like good for just onboarding users. Like, you know, if you have a friend that's never done it before, you could just like, oh yeah, just you. Most NFT people have heard of it, even if they haven't bought BRCs. So it's just like, oh yeah, Magic Eden, and it's pretty easy to use. You know, Alex is kind of like, you know, way more techy looking, and a little bit more difficult to use for sure.
For sure, man. One more NFT topic, or this is ordinals actually, and then I'm going to move on to something a little bit more broad. There was a mint this week. It's actually happened today. It's called OMB, and it's very interesting. So it's not really about floor price or anything. I know everybody claims that, but like this one's not. This guy went through some extremes to run this project, man. Let me read it to you real quick. His mom cried for 6 hours on a phone call because he quit his finance job that he spent 8 years for working at. His fiance left him because he didn't go to a wedding, a rehearsal dinner, because he was too busy inscribing sub-10K ordinals. And you think that's extreme? He left his country to relocate to another country. He left his birth country to relocate to another country because the government overreach and physical threats, all just to launch this project OMB. While I don't know a lot about it, I wasn't involved in the mint, I wasn't involved in the culture, it looks like a lot of this is actually like very strongly on decentralization and just like the whole movement. He even has so many references to hashtag Free Ross. Who he's alluding to on that is, if you're an OG here, you kind of understand the origins like of the space, is Ross Ulbrich. I don't know if I pronounced his name right. He's essentially the one responsible, and this is a little bit of controversy that we're about to talk about. He's the one responsible for the, whatever you want to call it, darknet, or if you want to say Silk Road, or whatever term you want to use for that. But basically, he created it and set it in motion, and he got arrested for this, has been locked up ever since. So anytime you see Free Ross, it's usually alluding to this, because the great controversy behind it, which I obviously need to do my own research more into this, is from my understanding, it's not like he wanted a open source, like a free internet, like a non-decentralized, but yeah, I mean, essentially like a free internet. Now what people did with that internet, obviously there's a lot of bad things that came out of it, drugs, human trafficking, a lot of other dark stuff, but whether that was his plan, you know, to actually like have that stuff happen, like I wouldn't say that. To my knowledge, it wasn't. He's just the one that set it in motion. He's been locked up ever since. He got his like, I was reading his tweets the other day. He got like one of his first visitors since COVID this year. They've been like very strict on him, like a high end security prison. This is the first visit he's had to where he didn't have to wear a mask since COVID. Just kind of brutal, man. And I know it's a controversial topic, but you know, we talk about everything on this podcast. So what's your opinion on it, Kyle?
Which part of all that?
Ross in general.
Oh, Ross in general, Silk Road. I don't know. Like, it's yeah, that's a hairy topic that maybe I don't know. Is it good, bad? Like, what was your exact question on it? You know, like, I'm not sure.
Be in prison?
It's a lot there. You know, if he was actively facilitating, you know, crime, then maybe, I don't know. But if not, like if he's just out there putting out code, then maybe not. So I don't know. I don't know the whole. I remember Silk Road. I remember when like it went down, like it, you know, it got taken down. I remember all of that. I just don't remember like the nuanced stuff and like the nitty gritty details because I wasn't that interested in the story. But I am for decentralization. Sure. So. Yeah, that's as much as I can say on that topic. You know, It's, and then that's about splitting hairs as well. You know, when you look at the macro of that, of like how far decentralized you want to go, then you have like ultimate decentralization. And then some people say, well, like at some point, like you might want to cash out. Like, so you need some kind of mechanism. So it's like, there's different layers to it. I don't know. It just depends on who you are, who you talk to, and like what your values are.
To my understanding, he wasn't involved in the facilitating like drugs or trafficking, but that's just to my understanding. And if that's the case, I don't think he should be in prison. I think that, and this is off the top of my head, you know, I wasn't really prepared to talk about this, but like if he's in prison, there's a lot of people that should be in prison for inventions that were like later turned bad, you know, like. There's a lot of things that were created for like good purposes and use cases behind them, but people did bad things with. So I don't know. It's kind of hard to say, and I'm trying to think of one on top of my head.
Yeah, I forget all the dark stuff that happened on the Silk Road at the same time. I'm like, oh yeah, you said all those things. I'm like,
yeah,
that stuff was pretty dark. Yeah,
it was dark. It's just, it's weird because like you have one guy who created the code for this to be able to run it. And I don't know if he knew any of that was going to happen, you know, so he essentially like unboxed or like opened the can of worms for like everything to happen. But like, I don't know. It's a weird topic, man. You know,
so it's like one of those things too. It's like, yeah, that's a concern that is always going to be had, is like when you create technology, it can be used in a certain way. And as usually humanity tries to put guardrails up. And part of the reason why I think Satoshi just remained anonymous is because exactly that, like he just created a code and wanted to like disappear into the bushes and like never be seen again or whatever he did, you know, whatever you believe about Satoshi, that's probably why he was anonymous.
He'd have probably been killed or in prison by now. And the thing is, right now you can inscribe, believe this or not, Kyle, you can actually inscribe Satoshis to where you can put images on them. If people do bad things with that, should Satoshi, if he was doxxed, go to prison? You know? Not like a close comparison of like...
Yeah, they should go after the actual criminal.
Yes, and... I don't know. It's just, it's a very weird thing, man. I think that the creator of Tornado Cash also went to prison. Granted, the Tornado Cash is basically where you could like wash your funds online to where you can't be tracked. But I think it was also like had like good use cases for it, but I'm not sure. And I also don't know what the founder like intended for it, but I believe they're also in prison.
Yeah, I mean, what if like somebody tracks your wallet and is like knows who you are and you have to like escape, you know, from that, like, you know, your life's in danger. You got to swap a wallet so you can maybe get to a safer location and use that crypto to move or like what. I mean, and there could be a potential there, like in terms of like use cases, but it's probably few and far in between. But yeah, the Tornado Cash is one of those things. It's like I saw, like that was so interesting to watch that play out. I mean, it's still live, isn't it? It's still like up and running. It's just the founder.
So there's like other ways to Tornado Cash now, but I think like the Tornado Cash like thing itself, I don't know if it got shut down or could get shut down, but I know like anybody tied to it got like I think Coinbase, restricted the US, wallets, the US like pressed in.
Well, the US said you'd basically go to jail if you were like, it's a federal crime is what they said. They came out and like,
so yeah, Kyle, you're sink. You know, you are responsible for everybody involved with OMI to have one of those like red O's, you know, on their Twitter handles. So like if they go off and do something off the rails, like do you think you should go to prison?
Well, I don't know if I'm responsible for for the I played a part in that, but you know, yeah, I mean a lot of I shouldn't go to jail for that because we already have enough grifters around in the NFT space as a whole, you know. And yeah, I'd be sucked to go to jail to like some of the actions of some random person with a red circle.
Yeah, man, if I get jumped at an IRL event and like I find out they're associated with like the red circle movement, like you're probably the first person I think about. So
no, I mean, I'm not like a leader, like a cult leader. Yeah, I'm not like that. You know, this isn't a gang or whatever.
Nah, I'm just messing around. Yeah, that was it's just interesting stuff to think about. And I think it's important for these talks like in the space, because like while you did mention that you weren't like super interested in like the whole ROS thing, like I do think a large part of like decentralization, decentralized web, a lot of things that we're working on and like figuring out, that kind of ties into the origins, like in a way, you know, it's a little separate than crypto, but like that whole decentralized movement and stuff, like it's important to at least think about for sure. And also yeah, anybody that's locked up right now, like for life if he did facilitate some of those things, like I get it, but if he didn't, it's like I don't believe anybody should be locked up for like
creating. The only problem it's hard because like one of the things with decentralization is like, although like it's awesome, like the only problem is like people live within countries, and within those countries they have laws, and if somebody violates those laws, like it's up to the country to put guardrails in place. And you know, if nefarious things are going on, like you said, like the worst crimes in humanity, obviously like civilization is going to come together to find ways to prevent and mitigate that. And even if it's like decentralized and you get like a ton of good use cases out of it, you always run into that issue of, you know, countries, sovereignty and laws and them wanting to facilitate that. And with Bitcoin, we're lucky to have it actually still, because, you know, we're seeing adoption, it's decentralized like finance. So it's good to have that in place. Like, and then hopefully, yeah, I mean, it's an interesting topic for sure, because it's like you have to think about not only decentralization, but then how does decentralization fall into society as a whole? And how, like, sure, like laws can't really prevent decentralization, but at the same time, governments can go after specific actors and pinpoint people right out of that company or that platform, or find out who invented that, and they will go after those people. And that's like the sad truth about maybe that person wasn't doing a bad thing, but it's good in the instance that like maybe they went after an actual bad actor, then society celebrates that. So again, there's just a lot to think through when it comes to that, and the two different sides and ideologies that will always probably clash at the end of the day.
Absolutely, so, man. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I think at the end of the day, you can't have complete decentralization. Like there are always, depending on where you live, like even in the U.S., like there will always be this. Like if the U.S. didn't want anyone to trade Bitcoin, you could, but they're going to make it really hard for you to. You know, like they're going to they're going to find out, like, if you mess up and you connect to internet without a VPN, or even if they're able to override whatever your VPN you use, they'll be able to track if you've used it at a library, or if you accidentally connected your phone to to your 5G, like find out where you're at. Like if they wanted to make it hard for you to, like, technically, yeah, you could still like use it, but if they wanted to make it really, really hard for you to use it, then they could. So,
you know. Yeah. I think the key takeaway too for Bitcoin is it gives you ability to like hedge in something that is not fiat. And I think that's like the greatest like thing about Bitcoin, and that part can't be censored, you know? So that's what I like Bitcoin about the most. One of the most things, you know, then you start talking about the other aspects, then it kind of starts going down the rails a little bit. Sure. But yeah, like what you were saying.
All right, man, lighter topic before we conclude, and I'll drop some alpha at the very end. I just wanted to talk about this because, like, you've been making content, like, before I was even born, and I'm a big fan of – I'm joking, Kyle, you're not that much older than me. And I'm a big fan of this guy, but Mr. Beast had an interview. I don't remember the name of the people that interviewed him, but he had the same interview 2 years ago, then he just re-had it. Basically just fleshing out a lot about content, like about what he's working on this year. And it's a 2-hour interview. I've watched like an hour and 30 minutes of it. One of the biggest takeaways for me that he's working on that I agree with is that he's really working on like storytelling and connection with audience. And he didn't say this, but I feel like it even ties further in with the AI, because during the next year or two, we're going to see so much AI-based content, AI-based editing, AI scripts, that, and we talk about AI a lot here on the podcast, that you're really, in order to stand out, you're really going to have personality. Like, you're going to have personality that actually stands out and people relate to, or people find interesting or entertaining, or you're going to be able to tell real stories. I think that a lot of robotic content has worked for a long time. In the NFT and crypto space, we see a lot of copy pasta content, which is essentially like you literally copy and paste what everybody's doing, whatever the meta is, and that gets interaction. I think all of that's short-lived. I even think short-form content, to an extent, is short-lived. While you should execute it now, it's short-lived if you cannot connect with people in less than 60 seconds. What's your opinion on storytelling and connection with your audience?
Yeah, that just goes back to like marketing for me, because that was a large part of what you do when you craft an actual landing page, which is a landing page is when somebody clicks an ad, they go directly to that page next. That's people land on that page. The way you immediately connect with that person is you have a what's called a hook, which is like the headline, of course. And then you have a story. So you go through your story. So you have a hook, story, and then an offer. And that is the exact formula that I would use when I craft a landing page or whatever. If I was like driving sales, people clicking on it. That's the only way, like you're talking about 60 seconds. I'm talking about 10 seconds or 5 seconds that people click on an ad and they look at that page for 5 seconds and decide whether or not they're going to stay on that page or go somewhere else. And that is how real marketing is actually done. And the best people that are great at that are great copywriters, great marketers. And so for me, when I see that and I hear that, I'm bullish on people that are great at marketing moving forward.
Yeah, for sure. But, you know, even like that hook that you're talking about, like that's obviously like relative, because I feel like even like 5+ years ago, you could have been a lot more like salesman-y and won people over. Well, or, you know, let's say like 8 or 10 years ago, like you could really like try to sell the product and it would probably work. The whole stereotypical like 3-piece suit, good pitch, you know, or whatever, like that might still work with some people. But like depending on what you're selling, but like I feel like the new standard is you kind of got to be human more now. Like you got to like kind of like build up some rapport with like who you're talking with.
So the hook is just designed to pull out human nature, because we always want to see like a thumbnail. We always want to look at a head. Like people are so drawn to the hook, and it applies to literally every industry. Like every like. You look at news, media, YouTube, content, they all have clickbait. They all have headlines. So that's called the hook. The story part, however, like you're saying, is the human part. So in great marketing, if you're especially at the higher price points, you need to be able to tell a great story. And if you don't, if you fail to do that, you know, you're going to lose a lot of people. And it's not like you said, it's not about the product. Like the product's great. Like when I was working a long time ago and I was selling like high dollar Tempur-Pedics, I wasn't selling Tempur-Pedics. I was selling great sleep. And again, great marketers know this.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess the last thing I want to hit with like that specific part of this section is, again, just the personability behind like whatever it is that you're selling or what it is that you want to captivate people on. Like, you know, again, less than a decade ago, politicians could literally just give their pitch on why they'd make a good candidate and like while on stage and basically fake it till they make it. And they still can to an extent, especially at that level. But like I've seen some politicians like have massive growth by making a TikTok video of them sitting in their room and recording themselves on like topics that are going on. It just feels so much more personal, you know, like it humanizes them a little bit more. So I think like storytelling and connecting people, whether this is with a product or with like an audience, is like more important than it's ever been. It's almost was like a cringe word a few years ago, like the whole like storytelling thing, because everybody wanted to do it. But like it's making more and more sense, especially with the growth of AI, because like you want to connect. And, you know, Mr. Beast, one of his recent videos, he gets ages 1 to 100 to all be able to see who can like last the longest, like in these like little places or whatever. But he adds things in there that makes it very like you connect with it. Like if I'm watching, I'm 28. I want to see how the 20-year-olds or the 30-year-olds are doing, you know, because that's they're close to my age. you know? And there's at one point towards the end of the video, spoiler alert for that video, where this guy, he makes it to the very end. He's like 32 or 33, and he hasn't seen his daughter in like days because like, and it was her birthday because he was doing this challenge. And they bring his wife and his daughter in, and it's like a very like genuine moment because he's so excited to see his daughter, and it's her birthday, and she's rooting for him, and his wife's rooting for him because I mean he's competing for like $1 million or whatever. So that moment was like the most like real thing I've ever seen in a Mr. Beast video, and I'm so glad he included it. Obviously, like you know when they're writing out the script and the content and all that, like he's thinking about that, like how can I connect people with my content? And I think he did a good job in that instance.
Yeah, I didn't get to see those interviews, but I've been a big fan of Mr. Beast since his early days. But these are a couple books that like I've read over the years. These are like really great books for anybody. But it's called Influence, Expert Secrets, and Dot-Com Secrets. These two, Expert and Dot-Com Secrets, are literally about telling stories. So if you want to be an expert at any field, any industry, this book... These two books, Dot-Com Secrets is more for like online marketing, but Expert Secrets talks about telling your story. This is literally the entire book is talking about that. Again, this is like part of where I came from in terms of marketing. And they have a software that they own for building websites and sales funnels, and everything just dropped off my shelf. But yeah, this like literal book you can go through, and it talks a lot about telling a story and how to position yourself as an expert in whatever field that you're in. So it's a lot of good relevant information and how to like persuade like a prospect and like all this other good stuff. Influence is good too. If you like just to learn how like influence actually works, like how people are able to offer free things to gain influence. Like it's a little bit, you can apply it to like marketing or even YouTubers. Like anybody can apply this stuff to whatever industry or field they're in. And that's like I should read these books probably once a year just to keep refreshed on it. That's how good these books are.
Awesome, man. Yeah. Thanks for the recommendations.
And I think, yeah, I got these for free. All I had to do is pay for shipping. It was really cool. I don't know if they still have that deal going on. And they may, because that's a part of the influence book too, is like giving freebies away to gain influence. That was like one part of the book, and that's written by a PhD. And this company actually practices that while teaching you this amazing like knowledge from some of the best marketers of all time, like Russell Brunson, and he learned from this guy named Dan something, where these guys would literally read like. They would nerd out by going through like the ad section of every newspaper and article and magazine. And they would look at everything and see what like the best of the best was. That's what these like guys do for a living. Like they just live and breathe it. It's actually insane.
I'll have to rewatch this and pick up one.
Dot-Com Secrets. And there's the 4-hour work week, but that's like more just like, how to not work, basically.
Alex Becker would hate that one. He's like, 4-hour work week. That's like a 4-hour what?
He uses the same methods, but he doesn't just work for 4 hours. He works for like all day.
What a fun life.
He's so high. Like he hired VAs and all kinds of stuff, just like the 4-hour work week says, but he just works nonstop until he's like at a multi-million-dollar level and then sells his companies.
Makes sense. But with all that being said, we'll do a TLDR to conclude. Got to keep this under an hour so that Twitter can be able to watch it. We talked about Palm, NFT, and Candy joining together. We talked about Twitter just incorporating some really cool stuff. If you're bullish and creating on Twitter, I encourage you just to keep doing it. We talked about anime mints and NFT, the Azuki Elementals, Ether Mint, BRC20s on Magic Eden. And some other, and of course, the Ross Ulbricht topic, some of the deep stuff. Here's some alpha for you, as I promised at the end. Ninja Alert is doing an Ordinals PFP drop. There's 1,500 of them. I think there's going to be 1,200 reserved for whitelist. In order to get a whitelist, all you have to do, at least that will incredibly increase your odds, is make a video of you eating a pizza and describe the pizza. I've already done this. I have an example. It's like one of my last videos on my channel as an example, and this will qualify you for whitelist. And I'm not just shilling this company because I work for it. Trevor, the owner of the company, is a huge influence in the ordinal space. I'm not going to make promises about price predictions or anything like that. Like, I don't know. We'll see how it goes. But I'm not just selling you a random thing. This is an ordinals PFP project. It's going to have actual utility tied to it. So similar to NinjaLerts, how we track on Ethereum, a lot of those tools will hopefully be available. I say hopefully as in I don't know this end of it particularly, but will be available on the ordinal side. So there's some major alpha for you. All you literally got to do is eat pizza for a chance to be able to mint this. Might as well do it. Any of you, my philosophy since last whitelist grind was always get whitelist first and then decide whether you want to mint later. But if you secure that whitelist first, at least you know I got it if I want a minute or if I don't want a minute, whatever. But other than that, you have any alpha for today, Kyle, or your books is your alpha?
The books were a pretty good alpha. Not really. That was probably good. I mean, I see other stuff going on in the NFT space. I think Lacoste now is moving into the NFT space, which is a fashion company. They have the little alligator.
I jumped in last year, actually. I think I bought some of their original stuff.
They have like a brand loyalty thing coming around the corner. Ubisoft is launching another game.
I actually
game.
Interviewed the top holder of the Lacoste NFT. He had the most Lacoste NFT, and I think he did pretty well on it.
So Ubisoft is launching another game, partnering up with Oasis Blockchain.
Ubisoft's so making big neat. Strides in the space. It's like they're connected with every single company that I know of, like Ubisoft and Quid, Ubisoft and Animoca Brands, Ubisoft and Vivi, Ubisoft and Sandbox, which I know Sandbox.
Yeah, they're big. Yeah.
So it's cool to see that.
And lastly, Unity implemented AI, which wasn't a big surprise. Yeah. But their stock increased like 12%.
Send it.
I mean, the convergence of AI, gaming, and Web3, and metaverse. All four of those are going to just blend nicely like this, and it's just going to come together. And then probably like 10, 15 years, people just won't be able to tell the difference. It's like, oh, it's all the same. It's like, no, like 10 years ago, they were all separate categories, but now it's the same now. But back then, just like how the iPhone was, like when NVIDIA said, this is the iPhone moment. Well, it is, because, you know, in 10 years, it's going to seem like, oh yeah, we're just on this like game and it's immersive and it's got blockchain and AI and anyways. Yeah.
Dang. I'm excited to see how it goes, how the progression of AI goes. And I do think it's an iPhone moment. I think that we're going to look back and be like, wow, that was only iPhone 1 and now we're on iPhone 14.
Yeah, ChatGPT is like one app where there's going to be a lot of apps. I actually bought an app for YouTube specifically because I was like, what are some of the ways I can be better at my craft? And then so I bought a tool to like help with the creation process, or actually really the back end process, like timestamps and all kinds of stuff.
Can you tell me about that later or drop it on the next episode? All right, guys. Thank you so much for watching. We will see you guys next time. Thanks for watching Degen Dads Podcast. Next week, it's going to be on Kyle's channel. Hopefully, very soon, we're going to get this on all streaming devices. Right now, you can go back and listen to just the audio only on YouTube Music. Pretty freaking cool, but we'll eventually be available on all platforms available to you. But as of right now, Twitter, YouTube Music. We'll see you guys next time. Peace out, everybody.